Okay. Heber, we were discussing yesterday the Gemara, which tells us at the bottom of Chesed Aleph that if you shaft with a knife of Avodah Zarah, the animal is permitted. So the Gemara asks, but why should the animal be permitted? What about the fact that there is still residue on the knife, which should prohibit the animal that you shafted? Residue of trefa animals or Avodah Zarah. So Gemara said, we're talking about it's a new knife. Or the Gemara said, we're talking about Shalibna Ba'ur, which is you did Libun on the knife. The Taisus asked, which means you put it in dry heat, which kashers the knife. And we discussed the whole parsha of Hashra Kelim, starting with Parshas Matos, and the whole two types of kashering, that of Libun, that of Hagalah. And the basic rule, Hagalah, of course, dipping it into hot boiling water. And of course, the basic rule is Kibo o Kach Polto, just being Makatzer, everything we discussed yesterday. The way that it goes in is the way that it comes out. So if it went in through dry heat, it comes out through dry heat. If it, at a temperature of 750 degrees or like a self-cleaning oven, the Shulchan Aruch described it as nitzin, there should be sparks flying. But we said nowadays, the Ramah is Mekel, sometimes we could get away with Libun Kal, even 550 degrees. Okay, but that's called Libun, that's dry heat. Or there is Hagolo, dipping it in hot water, and that's if it went in through hot water, so it'll come out through hot water. The same way that the Bliya went in is the same way the Bliya will go out. We discussed kashering glass and kashering ceramic. But at least when it comes to a metal knife, so the way that it went in is the way that it came out. So Tosfos asked the question, why should the Gemara require one to kasher the knife through Libun in order to permit one to sheft the knife, assuming the knife assuming the knife wasn't used directly with a fire? Why shouldn't the knife, which is, you know, was used for shechita, assuming that the base hashechita is hot? The Gemara is going to get to that in a second. So assuming that that area is hot and therefore the flavor got embedded in the knife because it was used with hot, to shechting the animal, which is a hot surface. But either way, it should be enough with hagala. That's not considered to have direct contact with the fire, direct heat. It's contact through a heated surface, but not direct contact with the fire. So it should be enough with hagala to put it into a boiling pot of water in order to kasher the knife. So that was Tosfos' question. Tosfos asks over here in the bottom of Chesed Aleph, why do you have to kasher the knife through Libun? It should be enough to kasher the knife through dipping it in the hot water. And Tosfos brought a proof to this from the Gemara Maseches Pesachim. Hey, let's see it again. Seven lines down in Tosfos. Hey, the mash mahok the boy Libun. V'chei mash menasam nami hasam b'toyz sefta m'sechtes avayda zara. It says knives together with spits and barbecues all require Libun, requires dry heat to a degree of 750 degrees. It says a problem on the first wide line over here in Taisa Shalibna, the Beperko Hashem, Mashud the Sagi Ba'agala. Knives, we said, for Pesach. Remember the whole discussion, but what do you do with knives on Pesach? One Amora said, I buy new ones. Or then we said, well, you're such a fine schmecker. So he said, no, I don't buy new ones, but I make it like it's new. How do I make it like it's new? He does Libun. Then the Gemara says, no, really, you don't need Libun. Ibi v'idi b'roiskin. You could just put it in a boiling pot of hot water, and that will kasher the knife. So don't you see? It's enough with boiling hot water to kasher the knife. You don't need Libun. So we distinguished yesterday, if you're kashering from milchiks to fleishiks, or back and forth, even though we have a minute not to do it, but if you're going to do a Pesach time, or before a carbon becomes prohibited after you wait 24 hours and becomes nicer, if you'll kasher the kli before then, so even though it went in through direct heat, you don't require Libun in order to remove the flavor that got embedded in the knife, or got embedded in the pot, because at the time that it went in, it was mutter. So as long as you did hagal, as opposed to, let's say, macholos hasuras went in, when it was asur, so you need dry heat in order to remove it. But if it went in, it was mutter. So then if you just did hagala, even though it went in through dry heat, but if you did hagala, that weakens the flavor, remember? And therefore, the Easter cannot become, take effect in that weakened state. So even if 24 hours will pass from the time you brought the carbon, it won't become nosar now because the flavor has already been weakened. Or if you have a meat flavor in the kli. So if you did hagala, you remove the meat flavor, then even now you'll cook it with milk. It can't become basa b'chala because the meat flavor has been so weakened that it can no longer become basa b'chala in this weakened state. So too, Tosfos says that that's true with chametz before Pesach as well. Chametz kodem haPesach is considered to be hetera bola. When it went in, it was permitted. So even though now when it comes Pesach, the flavor of the chametz, if it will come out into your food, you'll cook. You don't have to get rid of your pots on Pesach, because the flavor that's embedded in the pot is not bali ro, bali motzei. But if you'll cook with the pot on Pesach, the flavor will come out. and will infect the food with the flavor of chametz. So even though when you cooked in it, it was through direct heat, so it should have required direct heat in order to remove the flavor, Tosfos says with the knife, even though you might have used together with direct heat, because you might have taken the knife and touched direct heat with the knife while it was on the barbecue or while it was in a frying pan or something, so maybe you should require leaven in order to remove the flavor. But if you did it before Pesach comes, that's like a terabola. It's not chametz yet. There's no chametz the rest of the year. It's only the 8 days of Pesach, or 7 days of Pesach. In the Chutz Laaretz, it's 8 days. So only during the 8 days of Pesach is there a nisa of chametz. The rest of the time, it's like a terabola. You did Haggadah that weakens the flavor of the chametz. Pesach, the nisa of chametz cannot take effect. That was Tosfos' answer. Rabbi said, we understand? Any questions, please ask. Because otherwise, we're going to get a little bit lost. Right, that's Hachshu Kalim. That's what Tosfos suggests with regards to the Isav Chametz. So if you want to kasha your Kalim, you have to kasha them. If you kasha them with Haggadah before Pesach, you don't require Liban, even though it went in through direct heat. Normally, the way it goes in is the way that it comes out, direct heat, versus if it went in through the medium of a liquid. Direct heat, it gets embedded even further. But even if you used Haggadah and hot water, that weakens it. Now the Isav Chametz, when it comes the first night of Pesach, can't take effect because the flavor is in a weakened state. If it already became chametz, now I want to do Haggadah, that's not enough to get it out. It's too far embedded. Already became an Isav Chametz, like if it's if I cook tray for food there, gets embedded so far, you can't remove it with just a weaker form of Haggadah, you require leaver. The Ramban disagrees with Tosfos. Look back at the sheet from yesterday. The Ramban disagrees with Tosfos. Quoted over here by the Ritva. The Ritva says, on the third line of the Ritva, Ve'ein ze das ha-goinim. The Rigoinim disagree with Tosfos. Here, the Ritva quotes the Ravid says the same as Tosfos. So Mikan Dikdak Rabbeinu Ravid. The Kelim Shel Pesach Vafilu Hashvudim. Even if you have spits and barbecues before Pesach, which you cooked chametz to them, Bahagola Sagilahu. It's enough with Haggadah. Because once you dipped it in hot water, it weakens the flavor. Doha Terabali. It went in when it was mutter. Chametz is mutter in December. So you do Haggadah now, that'll weaken it by the time Pesach comes around. That's why knives, even though sometimes they're used with hot directly, right? Sometimes it's not just the base hashkita. Sometimes you'll take a knife and you'll use it directly with a fire to stoke the thing while it's revolving, you know, your pig with the apple in its mouth while it's going around on the spit of the fire. Or maybe I'll stoke my, you know, pork chops on top of the barbecue. So you require leaven on the knife. But if it's if that's only because it's Isur Bala, if it was Heter Bala, like chametz before Pesach, like meat before it became in contact with milk, so then it would be enough with Haggadah because that will weaken its flavor, just like Heter Bala, and it'll become permitted. Hasam Gabi Sakinim the Pisco the Saguhu Beroyskin Mashainkim Besakin Shogoyim the Bar Libam, as opposed to the knife of a goyim where it was prohibited because of Macholos Asuras, it went in as a cheftza of Iser to remove it. It's not enough with Haggadah. You got to get deep into the kishkas of the kli. You require liban in order to weed it out. So therefore, they're comparing chametz before Pesach like milk and meat. That's heterabala, or like the carbon before it becomes nosa. That's heterabala, and under all circumstances, you could use hot water to remove the flavor before the Iser will set in. But then he says, ve'ein zedas ha-goyim. The goyim disagree. Shem kasu de hechsher kli Pesach dinam ke hechsher kli goyim. The Iser of chametz exists a whole year. It only is like a sleeper cell. It's only activated for 8 days on Pesach, but it's there the whole year. So chametz, even in December, is isura bala vis-a-vis the Iser of chametz on Pesach. It's not that chametz all year long is mutter and it's only us or 8 days of Pesach. The Isav of chametz is latent there. It's waiting to be activated. Like a sleeper cell comes Pesach, ooh, and then it's activated. So it's Isur Bala, just like Macholas Asuris, just like tray for food. And if it went in through direct heat, let's say dry heat, you require dry heat at a degree of 750 degrees to remove the flavor that began embedded in the kli. And it's not the fact that you weakened it, you stunted it through Haggadah is not good enough. It's considered to be Isur HaBoah. Well, I mean, if that's the case, so how come you could use water in order to kasha your knives for Pesach? So we're going to get back to that in a second. Those knives might have been different knives. There's other terutim to Tosfos kasha. Our Gemara says knives require leaven. Sometimes you stoke the fire directly with a knife. Comes in contact with dry heat. How come the Gemara says before Pesach you could get away kashering your knives with just hot water? So Tarsus had a good reason, because it's mutter right now. So he stunted its growth, and by the time Pesach comes around, the Yisachamis can't set in while it's in its weakened state. The Ramban and the Rambam are saying, no, Chametz is no different than Shari Sum. If it's no different than Shari Sum, why did the Gemara say Imsochim? You can get away with putting your knives in hot water, and that will kasher the knives. We'll get back to that in a second. But you see, a big machlekes here is Chametz on Pesach Isurabala, before Pesach, is that Isurabala, or is that Heterabala? And this is, we paskin like the Ramban. We paskin that it's Isurabala. How do you know? Because it says over here, if you want to kasher your utensils for Pesach, Hebra, how do you kasher an oven for Pesach? How do you kasher a frying pan for Pesach? So we all know. If it was used with direct heat, you need direct heat. If it was used with water, it's enough with dipping it in hot water. So a sink, you can dip in hot water. Utensils, you can dip in hot water because they don't come in direct contact with the heat. If it does come in direct contact with the heat, it has to be kasher through libun. Through direct heat. Why? According to Tosfos, everything before Pesach is heterabala. So if you're kashering before Pesach, everything should just require just dip it in hot water. Obviously, you're not going to dip your oven in hot water, but I could take racks and frying pans and just dip it in hot water, and that should be enough. But we're not making like that. We were cooked for, went in through dry heat. It requires libun through, with heat in order to kasher for Pesach. We assume like the Ramban. This is mentioned over here in Siman Tofnun Aleph, Sif Dalet. Back in Isaiah, the sheet from yesterday. Kelim shemishdam shebehem aydei or kigon shvulim vaskos v'chayotzbem tzrichim libun. V'libun ad sheyei nitzotzes nitzimehem. You need it to be sparks flying, because we don't paskin like Tosfos, we paskin like the Ramban. Chametz before Pesach is not heterabala, it's isurabala. I think, suggest on my own, that this issue depends upon a chakira of Rabbi Yosef Engel. Look at this, Rabbi Yosef Engel is going out there. But in the Lekach Tov, he wrote when he was a young man in his 20s. Chevron in his 20s. The Shach wrote the entire Shach Zayit, I think, at the age of 38. Everything the Shach wrote, he wrote before the age of 38. All right, anyway, this is Rabbi Yosef Engel's, Shana Aleph book. So writes Rabbi Yosef Engel over here, Oysid Aleph. Rakesh Mokum Safik Bazeh. He's mistopic by all mitzvahs that come from time to time. Is it that mitzvah only comes from time to time, but it doesn't exist when it's not activated? Or does it exist all the time, but it only becomes activated during certain times? L'mashal. Is there Shabbos the whole week, but it only happens to be active one day a week? Or maybe Shabbos the whole week doesn't exist, it's like a chiddush that comes every 7 days. Ooh, we're surprised by Shabbos. Mazak
Su? What
will be the difference? Huge differences. Huge. Huge. So let's get to the subject. V'rakish mokum savik bazeh. Im a mitzvus hanoigim bezmanim yuchadim ko ikar hachiyuv shkam hu rak b'shas mana mitzvah. Is it only exists during that time when it's active? Like mitzvah sukkah v'lulav kal hachiyuv av adam rak b'sukkahs v'kaz mazeh ein olav inyun chiyuv. Maybe there's no obligation of sukkahs the whole year. It just active, only comes once a year. Odim ha-me'ar shenaseh godo hachiyuv muto olav ha-kachas lulav reishah b'sukkah b'zmano. The minute you become bar mitzvah, you're chayiv and lulav and sukkah, when you're activated, like your sleeper cell for sukkahs on those 8 days. There's no difference. Easter chametz exists the whole year long. Just you only practice it for 7 days. Shakim b'poel rak toich hazman we pass a kiyum b'poel who shenikras mitzvah hazmani as mitzvah seishes man grama. Yeah, what do you want to say?
I mean, it's very different, I would think, because you mentioned Shabbos every single day in Davening, and then we always do little activities for Shabbos.
Ah, that's Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai. Every day, you should, Mishnah Masechet Beis Beitza, you should take something and set aside the Kavod Shabbos. That's an Inyan, maybe.
I don't remember the last time I anticipated not eating Chametz.
Right, well, okay, but I think it's all the same issue. I think Chametz, Isura Bala, Hetera Bala is really the same issue with regards to this. Does Shabbos exist the whole week, or does it only come once a week? So Rabbi Yosef Engel goes on to argue that it does exist the whole week, because the Gemara says Masechet Shabbos and Daf Yud Ches, that you're not allowed to take a boat trip 3 days prior to Shabbos, because you'll be putting yourself in boat travel in those days was dangerous. Doesn't apply nine times anymore. But boat travel in those days was dangerous. You were inevitably going to have to violate Shabbos because, in order to save your life, because boat travel was dangerous. And you're not allowed to put yourself in that kind of situation where I know I'm going to have to violate Shabbos on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, because I should already be thinking about Shabbos. So he says, you see Shabbos exists a whole week long. Or, he quotes from the Gemara Masechtas Nida, Daf Yomi is learning Nida now. He quotes from the Gemara Masechtas Nida that Chasidim HaRishonim would not be Meshamesh Mitoseihem on Shabbos. even though the Gemara says the Talmud Chacham is only with his wife on Shabbos, because they wouldn't be Meshamesh Mitoseim on Shabbos when they're trying to get pregnant, because they were afraid 9 months later they would be obligated to violate Shabbos for the delivery. And they were planning that far ahead in advance. The Mishnah Berurah quotes like this from the Sefer Chassidim, I think, that is a praiseworthy practice. But where does it come up? It comes up. Why? Let's say a couple is getting to the 9th month. They know she's going to deliver soon. Should they, in advance of that, take a hotel room closer to the hospital so they don't have to violate Shabbos? They could walk over. Or let's say the in-laws or the outlaws live close to the hospital and their apartment is further away. Are we obligated to go stay by the in-laws so that we won't have to violate Shabbos? So the Sefer Chassidim says a nice idea based on this, Chassidim HaRishonim, that they would go and stay, they would not be Meshamish Mitoseim 9 months in advance in order to prepare for the delivery to be Mamayat Bechilul Shabbos. Most Paiskim don't assume like this. There might be a Midas Chassidus, but nothing more than that. Because this is, you only have to be Mamayat, you only have to minimize Bechilul Shabbos, first of all, when the situation arises, not in advance, and even then, it's only when all things are equal. I could get to the hospital by driving, by calling Hatzalah, where a Jew's going to violate Shabbos, or I get to the hospital by taking a taxi where the night driver will be non-Jewish. So you should always try and do less. Take the taxi. Why should you have a Jew drive you? If time is of the essence, of course, you have the Jew drive you. But if Hatzalah comes quicker. But otherwise, all things being equal, try and minimize it in the Chilul Shabbos. So that's only if all things are being equal. If it's not all things equal, so then you have so it's not equal to stay by the in-laws. That's Mamish Mesiris Nefesh, right? So you don't have to do that. In order to be Mamayit Bechilul Shabbos, huh?
Oh, meaning stay by the in-laws.
Let's say they live on the east side. I walk over to Mount Sinai, no problem.
Why your wife's the
neighbor? I don't know. I certainly don't have to. You can minimize. A guy lives in Bergenfield and he's going to go to LIJ, that's a big deal. If you were as opposed to over there, so it's less Chilul Shabbos for sure. Much less time in the car and all that. Yeah, what are you saying?
I'm just very confused about if Shabbos is all week. But we're only talking about cases when there's malacha being like...
We're saying, of course it's not, there's no Shabbos the whole week. There's no problem being doing malacha the whole week. The question is, am I thinking about, meaning does Shabbos apply Sunday through Friday, just it's not activated? Or no, it doesn't exist Sunday through Friday.
Should it be my mind all week?
Well, that will be a function of the fact whether it exists the whole week, right? If Shabbos exists the whole week, just I'm only activated one day a week, then I should probably start thinking about it, at least when we're getting close, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And the Gemara says you're obligated to do that. So if Yosef Engel proves from here, and from this on, the practice of the Chassidim HaRishonim, that they were thinking about Shabbos way in advance. Why? It doesn't exist now. The answer is no, it does exist. You're only activated once a week. So, it's your turn once a week, but it's really there. So I think that's the same machlokes. Is the Isa of Chametz applied a whole year? It's only relevant for 7 of those days, or no? It doesn't exist the whole year. I'm not bechlal, not thinking about Chametz. It doesn't exist. Ki'ilu lohaya. Comes who? 7 days of Pesach. Well, what do you know? Isa Chametz. So that will depend. If the Isa of Chametz exists the whole year, then it's Isur Bala. It's like Machalas Asuris the whole year. Come Pesach time. Or if it's a terabala, so then maybe the Yisuf Chametz doesn't exist. Oh yeah, that's the other side of Rabbi Yosef Engel's Chakira, yeah.
Does he suggest regarding Chametz that...
He doesn't make this extension, this is my own.
I was saying, well, maybe you could say that, when you're cleaning up your house for Chametz, it's thinking about Chametz part of the year. And besides for that, I don't really think anyone thinks about Chametz prior to Pesach.
Well, that's this machlokes we shine him. Is Chametz in December Isur Bala?
I'd say December and March are different.
I have to start preparing for the Chag. That's already in preparation for those 7 days. I'm saying now, if I have Chametz in December, goes into a pot, Taisa said, use Haggala, even though it went in through direct heat, direct fire, no water, use Haggala, that a week in it comes Pesach, these the Chametz can't be called. The Ramban says, what are you talking about? It went in through direct heat. You want to use it on Pesach? You need direct heat to get it out. It's no different than Machol Sassuras. I'm saying, why? The Yisav Chametz doesn't exist. Isn't Tosis right? No, maybe Tosis is not right. Because maybe the Yisav Chametz exists in December. Just it's not activated till March. Yeah.
I don't know if it's like Fan Shechar, but I know some people don't learn Sfarim with Chametz around.
That's for crumbs.
It's not like I'm saying.
That's because they're afraid of crumbs in this. Well, we can discuss again if you want. But do you have to be afraid for crumbs in the Sfarim? Nah, that's a separate enigma. If it is an inyan, it's nothing more than that. Oh, so let's get back 1 minute. So then, according to the Ramban, we're left starting with we're back to square one. If a knife goes into direct heat, it requires direct heat to get it out. So then, under all circumstances, you know, even chametz before Pesach, because chametz applies the whole year. So then, how did the Gemara say himself with the flamin of a base? It's enough to put the knives in hot water before Pesach. You should require liban with direct heat. So Taisa has two other answers. V'Emar Rabbeinu Tam, the Yesh L'Chalek. Well, the Ramban has his own answer. Let's see what the Ramban says. The Ramban and Chulin. The Ramban says, Lav Dafka. That's always the easiest answer. When the Gemara said here, you need to be Malabnan Ba'ur, our Gemara doesn't mean Libun. It's enough with hot water because no knife is ever used directly with the heat. Who uses a knife on a barbecue? Who uses a knife on a frying pan? A lot of people. A lot of people do it. A lot. I've seen people cut stuff in frying pans where there's no water, right? And the little bit of oil you use does not make it into cooking. It's still direct heat. And they use knives to cut chicken cutlets, to cut pancakes, to cut stuff all the time in frying pans. But all right. The Ramban says, no one uses it with direct heat. Why should a knife require liban? It's enough with Haggalah. You use your knife after it's off the fire. Who uses it directly on the fire? So he says, well, which our Gemara said, in order to kasher the shechita knife, you need liban. Nah! Hadik haminin kagon shalimna ba'ur zu eina taira. We didn't mean that. We're not discussing Haggalah here. That's in Avodah Zarah. No one's discussing this now. We're not discussing this. So we spoke a little bit b'lab davka. The Gemara said libun, it meant hechsher kalim. Kol adam lafi mashahu. We're not getting involved in the weeds and the details and the particulars of hechsher kalim. Well, dine b'mai v'dane dekasa b'mai. We're not talking about the handle and the blade. B'mai v'tofas tahara gemura kiu kamar shagun. Okay. The Gemara doesn't want to get involved in it. So the Gemara says libun as if that's enough in all situations without getting involved in the particulars. But of course, a knife would be enough. If you never used it with hot, would be enough with Haggalah. Like the Gemara said himself. Rabbeinu Tam here, though, has two other answers, the second one of which is a huge deal. So V'Omer Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam is on a roll over here. Keeps coming up with answers that make big impacts. So where's the second answer? This is the second answer. The first was to be say chametz before Pesach and say teruboa, but we said the Ramban and Shulchan Aruch don't accept that. V'odam Rabbeinu Tam, the hakol b'tosef the arbi sakinim gedolim shetzolim behen basav avi tashmishin oidei ha'or. He says similar to the Ramban. Here we're discussing two different kinds of knives. These are long knives. I would guess I'd call it like a stoker, right? In a barbecue, they have those pitchfork. I don't know. They're not called pitchforks. That's like Sutton has a pitchfork, and not in our tradition, but in theirs. You know, and like but you know what I'm talking about. I don't know what they call it. Yeah, you know, and, I don't know. Maybe it's called a pitchfork. Pitchfork is like for hay. This is like a tooth. You know, everyone knows what I'm talking about. Men barbecue. We don't know a way around the kitchen. We know a way around the barbecue. People use this with fire, so it requires libun. Libun. V'davka nami the kachashu who b'toysefta. That's why the toysefta brought sakinim bahadei shfudim v'achsalos, spits and barbecues. We're discussing the barbecue accessories. The gemara m'sachim about sakini the piskam. Rabbi Katanim is talking about silverware knives. Nobody uses a silverware knife on a barbecue or in a frying pan. Nah, different kinds of knives. Okay. That's why enough. So it depends. Kol knife for fimashu. If it's a knife that's used with hot water or off the fire, Haggalah. If it's a knife that's used on the fire, libun. And of course, that distinction will make a lot of sense. But then Tosfos goes on. Vasikinim yishanim shanu lekum and ardei kochavim. What if I go antiquing and I buy an old knife? I don't know what they used the knife for. Was this on the barbecue? Was this on the frying pan? Or was this all me? Off the fire. Ha'emari, better a mayor, shetzrichim libun. V'bnei shedera cho'evdi kochavim v'sakim behaner shodog behen chelev. Cholov. They would, fat. They would use their knives to adjust the candles that were used, were made from animal fat. So it came in direct contact with the fire, requires libun. V'gabi mahapkim behen bosa, gabi kochavim, and they will flip their hamburgers with their knives. So if you go antiquing and you buy a knife, libun. Rabbeinu Tam haya oimer, no. Kevin de ein iker tashmishon lekach. Even though they did that once in a while, that's not what the knives were made for. That's not the main use of the knife. Lekach lechayshin and dilmi yisrami. We're not afraid. Maybe it happened. Vavet hok, and he acted like this. Va'oid. Even if he did do this, or even if he flipped it on the barbecue cover, it's enough with Agala. How could that be? What are you going to use it for? You're going to use it for, not on the fire, you're going to use it for, you know, Hagala type things. So whatever came out through Agala is all that will come out when you use it. You're not going to use it through Livon, you're only going to use it through Hagala. You know, use it off the fire. So whatever comes out, off, you know, in the hot water, will already come out now before I use it. What? So Taisus here makes a protest. That's what we said yesterday. Ve'ein ze diuk. What? Just because you did Hagala once, you don't think it's going to keep coming out? We said this is like, you know, it's going to keep dripping out, drips and drabs. Every time you use it, a little more is going to come out. So you can't say, "Well, I do Hagala once, that solves the problem, and unless I do it with libun, you know, it's not gonna come out anymore." No, it comes out drips and drabs. So we said yesterday with klicheres, right? Even if you use a klicheres, it never leaves the klicheres. It's like a sponge; it keeps coming out every time you use it. There must be an end somewhere inside, right? Just based on the laws of Newton and the mass and how much is in there already, that every single time I use it, it's going to keep coming out more and more. So at some time, that's what the Bala Iter said, if you did three Hagalas already, how much is left in this Klicheres? We don't rely on that, Lamaisa. We assume every time it comes out a little bit more. So just because you did Hagala, that's not enough. You would require Liban if it went in through Liban. But Rabbeinu Tam said a different distinction. Rabbeinu Tam also said that since it's not its main usage, even if you might have done it once or twice, that doesn't necessarily mean you require libun. So what Rabbeinu Tam here is telling us is, we follow the majority of its usage. So if I have, chevra, a utensil that is generally not used for the fire directly, once in a while it might have been, what would Rabbeinu Tam say is the type of hechsher it requires? Hagala, no problem. Or I'll do you one better. Let's say it's generally not used with hot at all. It's generally used with cold. So according to Rabbeinu Tam, even though I once might have used it for hot tea, it should require no hechsher at all. You follow the majority of its usage. Wow, come on. So here, as well, the Ritva disagrees. Is this? I don't know, it's not there as well. It's quoted here in the Shulchan Aruch. Most Rishonim disagree with this. What? You follow, bro? Look over here. It's actually Machlokes, the Shulchan Aruch, and the Ramban. The last thing from the sheep from yesterday, Simon Tafna and Alf said, Vav. The Shulchan Aruch passes like Rabbeinu Tam. Ko Kli, Hokenbel Acha, Rov, Shimu, Rov, Tashmisho. We follow the majority of its usage. Hilka Ka'aros, Alpha Pisho, Shulafam, and Mishnah, Shabem, Bakli, Rishon Aish. Therefore, even if you have sometimes plates that you might cook with them, Kevin Sharov Tashmishin, who be Eroi, most of the time it's when you take food and put it on the plate, not you cook on the plate. Shema'ar Alei Miklivishon Kachwe Asheron. So you kosher it by dipping it in hot water. However, it's generally used, not according to the minority of its usage. The Ramah disagrees. Yesh Machmirin. Lahagil Hakaras Miklivishon Vechenu Aminig. No. If you sometimes use it as a klivishon, meaning on top of the fire, that's how it would require a hechsher. V'chein b'chol davar sheyesh lachos shemen ishtamish bo b'klivishin. Anything that maybe was once used directly with the fire, kagoyin, kapos, v'chadoyme, spoons and forks and knives, v'yesh machmirim lahagil, so therefore it requires, you have to be cheshish for the minority of its usage. V'yesh machmirim lahagil kol klishasiyah. Therefore on Pesach we have a problem with all drinking utensils, because maybe once in a while, you'll say, well, I can have the same glasses that I use all year on Pesach, because maybe once in a while I use it for hot. That's why the minig is on Pesach to switch everything, even the stuff you normally use with cold. Why? You could kasher cold by just cleaning it out. Because maybe once you use it with hot. The minig is tekasha then. So, chaver, that's why we have deconstructed and demystified all of the chumras of Pesach, because maybe you once used it with hot, even though it's generally used with cold. According to Rabbeinu Tam, maybe the sack by the Sfarim is that should be enough. You follow Roiv Tashmishoi. But most of the Rishonim disagreed with this sack of Rabbeinu Tam. We don't follow Roiv Tashmishoi. We have to account even for the minority. Every usage matters. Every Jew matters. So every usage matters. That it's so compelling. Why? Why? Rabbeinu Tam makes almost, I mean, it's difficult to justify almost. Why? Why do I say Rabbeinu Tam is so difficult to justify? Because let's say I have this pot. I once used it directly with the heat. How far embedded did the flavor get in the pot? Deep. Deep, deep inside. Deep. And it's going to keep coming out again and again, Taisa said. Every time you use it, it's going to come out a little bit more. So what that I only did it once? An aveira that you do once is still an aveira. It still got embedded deep in the pot, even though it wasn't the normal usage. Most of the time it's used with cold. But if I once used it with hot, how could Rabbeinu Tam not be concerned that if I'm going to use it with hot again, it's going to come out again? How could he say you don't require asher at all? Because it's usually used with cold. I usually use it with a medium of water. So I could use hagola to get it out. Why? But the liman makes it embedded even further. You should require direct heat in order to get it out. How could he say, well, since you only do it once in a while, it doesn't matter? What? How could that be? What's going on over here? So I believe where Rabbeinu Tam held is the following. We don't have time to get into it, but it's Rabbeinu Tam l'shitasa with regard to another issue. But I believe what Rabbeinu Tam held is the following. We said the general rule, the guiding principle of all of Hekshar Kalim is Kebo'oi Kach Polto. The same way it went in is the same way it comes out. If it goes in through water, it comes out through water. Went in through direct heat, you require Libun. But Rabbeinu Tam feels that rule dictates which category of Hekshar you require. But we don't get involved in the particulars of how it went in or how it came out. We say that based on the majority of usage, you either fall into one box or the other. Meaning, kibbol kapoto doesn't mean necessarily the way you went in is the way that it comes out for each instance. But rather, that just determines which box, which category you're put in. And therefore, Rabbeinu Tam feels that if the majority of its usage is one or the other, that's what dictates which box it goes into. But we don't get involved in the details of how it went in or out. Chaver, what is boiling temperature? Please say you know this. What temperature does water boil at?
273.
Come on. Huh? Nobody knows?
Water boil?
150? It's embarrassing. All right, we won't put it on the resume. 212. 212. Water boils at 212. Okay? I hope no one here is a chemistry major. Water boils at 212. Whew. There's no way you're going to know the next one then. What, if you keep going higher up in the sky, closer and closer to outer space, so there is greater atmospheric pressure, correct? I believe that's correct. Less atmospheric pressure. More or less. This I forgot already. But if you go higher up, it's either more or less, but it's a different atmospheric pressure. That's why it's harder to breathe in Denver than it is over here. It must be less atmospheric pressure. Google, is it less atmospheric pressure or more atmospheric pressure? But either way, that affects the boiling temperature. That's why, the more pressure, the higher the temperature. So in Denver, in order for water to boil, the more pressure will require a higher temperature. So water will boil at a higher temperature. The higher you go, there's more atmospheric pressure. So water will boil at a higher temperature in Denver than it boils here. Because the higher you go, the more pressure, the higher temperature that it takes to boil. That's what's known as a pressure cooker. What's a pressure cooker? You've heard the phrase, I'm sure. That is that it's a sealed container that creates more atmospheric pressure, and therefore the liquids could get to higher temperatures. See, what's the highest temperature a liquid could get to here that's water-based? 212. What happens at 212? it converts to a gas. So it can't get hotter than 212. Let's say I need liquid that's hotter than 212. How can I get liquid that's hotter than 212? Well, you can take a liquid that's not water, that sometimes have higher boiling temperatures like oil. Or I could get a pressure cooker. Pressure cooker increases atmospheric pressure and therefore makes a higher boiling temperature. It could be 215, 220, 225, 230, because the more atmospheric pressure, the higher the boiling temperature. So water that boils in Denver will not boil at 212, it'll boil at a higher temperature. So let's say I used a Kli with hot water in Denver, and now I come back to New York and I want to kosher it. How do I kosher it? It went in Denver at 225. How am I going to kosher it here at 212? Kibbo kapoto. So Rabbeinu Thomas would argue that's exactly the point. We don't care what the particulars, how it went in or out. Kibbo kapoto determines what box do you fall in, Hagala or Libun. And whenever you fall into that box, that's enough. Enough. That's all the Torah requires. So Rabbeinu Thomas therefore feels that if we're not going to say, well, you require 230, 230 degrees like you had in Denver when I kosher the Kli here, so then I shouldn't necessarily require, just because I once used it with direct heat, I shouldn't require Libun if most of the time it's used with Hagala. You hear what I'm saying? That's Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says it just falls into a category. We don't care about the particulars of how it went in or out. Whatever the category of Heksher is, that's the category of Heksher it requires. Whether it's at the same temperature it went in or not. So Rabbeinu Tam makes the argument, well, then if that's the case, if the majority of times it's used with a medium of liquid and not with direct heat, I should be enough with Hagala, without Libun. Once I use it with Libun, so it got really embedded in the Kli, the Torah says, Kibbol Kapolto, the normal way that he's used. And here, no, we're not worried about the minority. And Rav HaRishonim disagree. That's how the way this typo explains Rabbeinu Tam. Most of the Rishonim disagree with Rabbeinu Tam. They say, no. Kibbol Kapolto means we care exactly about the particulars of how it went in and exactly of the way that it came in is the way that it's going to go out. And I don't know what they would say about the pot from Denver that came over here, but we use this for the kula all the time on Pesach. Lamasho, person has an oven that has no self-cleaning function, like most ovens here in the Heights, which are old ovens that have just been repainted with silver paint. So if you have a new oven that has a self-cleaning function, gewaldic. But a lot of old ovens don't. Or, even more, let's raise the stakes, a warming drawer. Anybody know what that is? Please say you know what that is. What is it, Avrami?
A little thing that goes under the oven that's very heating something up quickly.
See, this is a man who knows what he's talking about. Okay, a warming drawer is, instead of the oven, it's made just to warm. I'm cooking stuff in the oven at one temperature, 350, but I need stuff to remain hot until I serve my meal. I can't cook everything all at once. So this, most ovens now come equipped with a warming drawer, which has its own adjustments, and it's used generally for just warming stuff. People want to use it to heat up food Shabbos morning, which we're not discussing right now. How do I kosher such a thing? Can I use it on Pesach? Well, you need direct heat at 750 degrees. How are you getting 750 degrees in your warming drawer? There's no self-cleaning function on any warming drawer in the entire world. It doesn't exist. How are you going to kosher your warming drawer for Pesach? Maybe you can't. Or maybe we can say like this. Maybe we can say, what temperature that is the most you use an oven at? Anybody know what temperature most ovens go up to? Most ovens go up to about 500, 550. Not more than that. And the highest most people cook at is 450. Fine. So what do I do? Why? Kibbolo kapoto, the way that it goes in is the way that it comes out. I'll kosher my oven over here in the Heights. We never use it for more than 400. Maybe the tenant before me, though, did. So I'll put it up to 500 degrees. No one's cooking it hotter than 500 degrees, and I'll leave it like that for an hour. That should be enough to kosher. What are you concerned? Should you leave on gummer? Yeah, but kibbol kapoto, the way that went in is the way that it comes out. So it went in at 500, not more. It'll come out at 500. Or do we say no? Once it's used with direct heat, that puts you in two baskets, either Hagala or Libun. Libun is defined as 750 sparks flying direct heat. That's what you need. Anything less than that is garnished. Or do we say no? We care about how it went in. If we care about how it went in, and that's the way it'll come out, so then maybe we could say it's enough with 450, 500. And that's the way most poskim are makel today, In the olden days, no one was making like this on Pesach. That's why you have everyone who didn't have a self-cleaning oven sitting there with the blow torches. Nowadays, it melts the oven wall. I don't recommend it. Nowadays, it's a little bit dangerous also. Nowadays, most are mako that the same temperature went in is the same temperature came out. If you have an oven that self-cleans, gavaldic. If not, you put it up to the highest temperature, wait for an hour. Why? The way that it went in is the way that it came out. That's not like Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam said, no, you even put in one or two baskets, Roiv determines the way that it, you know, whichever basket you put in, we don't care about the particulars of how it went in and how it came out. And therefore, Rabbeinu Tam said, you follow Rov. He used that Svara Lakula. Ooh, let's follow Rov. If most of the time you use it with the medium of water, then all I need is Hagol, even though once or twice I might have used it with Libun, with direct heat. But if we're going to reject Rabbeinu Tam, then maybe we can say we do care about the particulars. We're not going to follow Rov. We're going to follow the Miyad, but maybe that also lends brings about a Kula. And that is, if it only went in at 450 or 500, I shouldn't need 750 degrees to take it out, the flavor from the that got embedded in the walls or in the pot, because it only went in at 550. It'll come out at 550. Kabbalah, Kakpota, the same way it went in is the same way that it came out. Most places can make it like that. To nowadays. Okay, so that's Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam, big Kula. Which the Shulchan Aruch paskins like that, you should follow Rav. We only use it as a tzad l'kula. We typically don't paskin like Rabbeinu Tam. It's a tzad l'kula, right? If you have a shaila about the tefilas kelim, hechsher kelim, so it's a tzad l'kula. But we generally don't rely simply on the Rabbeinu Tam. Okay, Chaver, let's go on in the Gemara. More hechsher kelim. So itmar. This is a huge sugya. Comes up all the time. Chaver, oh yeah, yeah. Who has done that? Nobody. But we want to eat food that was cut with treif knives all the time. You say, who's eating food that was cut with a treif knife all the time? What? And the cats say, chas v'shalom. Who's eating food cut with treif knives all the time? People who go out to eat in treif restaurants. Who would ever go out to eat in a treif restaurant, Gavaldik? No, it's people on business meetings. What's the only thing you can eat in a restaurant, if anything? Well, it's the only thing people talk about. A salad. Who cut the salad? The Goyish chef. Was his knife a kosher knife that he bought in the Buzz in Bar Park? No. No. He probably used it to cut the shrimp. Now he wants to cut my salad. Well, let's say you walk into the grocery store and they sell cut fruit. Oh, yeah, yeah. Or the people wants to order the smoothie of the guy over here on the street who's selling smoothies in the Riverside Park. And he's cutting fruit and bananas and oranges. Can I buy the smoothie? Who knows what he used the knife for when I wasn't watching? Maisim b'chol yoim. Or a guy wants to buy fish, kosher fish from a fish market, but the guy just cut octopus. And now he's cutting my salmon. Oh, what's the story? All of that is from this sugya. So, Ad Itmar. A person chefs with a knife of an Oyvei Kechavim. Rav Amar Koylev. Rav says, you have to remove the outer layer of the Makom HaShechita. Why? Because it touched the treif knife. Rav Amar Chana Amar Madiach. No, you don't have to remove the upper layer of the flesh. After you shech the animal, just wash it off. So maybe they're arguing about this. Again, we said flavor can only be imparted through heat. Even heat is not really enough. You typically require a liquid. Let's say, have you ever thought about this? You ever thought about this? You have to have separate milk and some flasic pans? That much you know? How much? Yes, yes. Why? What are you afraid of? What are you afraid of? You're afraid, well, the flavor that went into the milchik pot will come out into the meat that I'm cooking in the milchik pot. It'll make a buzz of a chalav. Okay. What about this? What about the fact that I used, and most people use the same stovetop grates for milchiks and flasiks? Right? Anybody here have two separate stovetops? Two separate ovens? Yes. Two separate stovetops? Milchik stovetop and a flasik stovetop? You know what a stovetop is. For the fire. You need separate. Why not? Why not? Why aren't I afraid that the milk cakes that I cooked at one stovetop will go through the pan into the fire, into the food that I'm cooking in the fleshik pot that I did cook right after it? You could cook. I cooked macaroni and cheese there for lunch, and now I'm cooking chicken soup. So the answer is the Gemara is a rule. Ein bulia yoytimi kedera lekedera below roitev. Even if macaroni and cheese fell on the stovetop grate, which is already an if. That's not going to travel through my chicken soup pot into my chicken soup because there is no liquid there allowing it to travel through, to conduct the flavor. You need something to conduct the flavor. And the only thing that conducts the flavor is liquid. Ein belia, a flavor. Yoetze mikadera, the kadera can go from one pot to the other pot below roitev, unless you have liquid medium. So how does then a milchic flavor that got embedded in a pot come out and attack the fleishiks that I later cooked there? Because I'm cooking chicken soup. So the flavor from the liquidy substance of the macaroni and cheese will now go into the chicken soup. Or the fat that's in the meat will allow the flavor from the meat to travel into the barbecue or the grate or to the knife that I'm using. But you need some kind of liquid medium in order to transfer the flavor. So itmar, hashoyka b'sak, and shoyka b'kavim rabba merkaylef. Rav says you have to remove the upper layer of the flesh. Rav barachan amar mediach. It's enough just to wipe it off. Leven b'hokam afligi. Maybe talking about this. The marasav beis hashkita tzoinin. He holds no flavor goes through if it's cold. See, he holds the beis hashkita tzoinin. Wash everything off and all goes home. Everybody's all right. You shouldn't use a treif item. L'chachila. You shouldn't use a milchik knife or a milchik spoon to eat cold fleishiks. Not supposed to do that because it might come to confuse the kalim, but if everything's cold, it's really all right. You go home and wash everything off and put everything, you know, everybody goes back to their base safely. No, the place of the makom hashkita is hot. So the knife becomes usur. And the upper layer of the flesh becomes usur from the knife of the Yavik HaKavim. So you have to remove the upper layer of the flesh. See, Mara says, no, they're not arguing about whether the makom hashkita is reisecha. So I need to call yam hashkita reisecha. Everyone holds it's hot. Mandam or koylef, the one that holds, you have to remove the upper layer of the flesh, shapia. That makes a lot of sense because everything is hot. The blia went through the sak and shalvei deskachavim into the flesh. Mandam or madiach, the one who holds, you just wipe it off. I did the teridi simonim lafuke dam. Since there's so much blood flowing out, nothing is coming in. The Gemara assumes that since stuff is pouring out, flavors from the knife cannot go into the flesh because there's so much stuff coming out, blood coming out. How could anything possibly get in? Right? Picture a door at the, shear lets out. So many people coming out, or so many, after mincha, so many people coming out, no one could possibly get in. So it's over here, so much blood is coming out, even though it's hot, how could anything possibly get in? And therefore, the flesh, you don't have to remove the upper layer of flesh. Iga the Yami, or another answer, the Kuli Yama Beis Hashkita Tzoinin, everyone holds it's cold. Manda Amar Mediach, the one that holds, you just wipe it off Shapir, that makes a lot of sense, because everything is cold. Manda Amar Kalef, Agav Dukha de Sakina Bala, oh yeah, yeah. The one that holds, that you have to remove the upper layer of flesh, because even though it's cold, and even though normally in order to impart flavor from one thing to something else, you have to not only have a liquid medium, you have to have heat. If there's Dukha de Sakina, you're using a knife, that's if I'm using a spoon or a fork. If I'm using a knife to cut through something, the knife puts in the flavor into the other item, even without heat. Dukha de sakina bolo. Even though it's not yad sogeres bo, it's not hot, that your hand would recoil from the heat, doesn't matter. Dukha de sakina, the knife can impart a flavor even though everything is cold. Oh, we can see where this is going. But first, Tosis says, before we get to the Dukha de Sakina, Tosis here is a basic question. 1 minute, and this brings us to an important yesod in all of Hechsher Kelim. Have a look over here. At the top source, Gemara Avodah Zarah, Ayin Hei Mebeis. The Gemara is a general rule. Have a, how does Haggadah work? What happens when I do Libun? How does Hechsher Kelim work? We said, what happens? Flavor got embedded in the pot. You got to get it out. Why? Because otherwise it's going to come out into the kosher dish I subsequently cook there. So if I cook shrimp in a dish, in a pot, and I want to cook, lakshin kugel, or I want to cook matzo ball soup in the shrimp pot, so I'm afraid that the flavor of the shrimp is going to come out into my matzo ball soup. Fine. So you have to kosher the pot. What does koshering the pot ostensibly do? Remove the flavor from the pot. Okay. So if it's libun, if I heat it till it's red hot or nitzot sparks are flying, so we assume whatever flavor got embedded in the pot has already been burned. How does Haggadah work? I cook it the same way it went in, it's the same way it'll come out. What do I assume? When I cook hot water in this pot that I use to cook shrimp, the flavor of the shrimp comes out. Where does it go? Right back into the pot. So what have I solved? How does it solve anything? The flavor of the shrimp comes out into the pot. It's going to go right back into the pot. Where it came. How does Heksher Kalim work? So we have to say one of two things. We have to say, no. Even though the flavor comes out into the water, maybe I have so much water there that whatever flavor comes out will be batel b'shishim. We said normally there's a concept of bitul b'roiv. We follow roiv. Achrei rabim lahatos. But if it's a flavor, as long as I can still taste it, it's still relevant. That's the principle of tam ki'ika. The flavor is like the item itself. But if there's 60 times the flavor, we have halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, or it's based on a tradition, that 60 times, typically, if it's more potent than that, it won't work, but if it's 60, you know, typically a flavor is batel b'shishim, so if I have 60 times the volume of the flavor that got embedded in the pot, so I could be mavatel, the flavor that got embedded in the walls. So picture, I have a pot, whatever flavor got embedded in of the shrimp, it's going to come out into this water, which is kosher, it'll get batel in the water, and then therefore it does not go back into the pot. Small problem, how much shrimp got embedded in the walls of the pot? How am I supposed to know? So we say in Shulchan Aruch, we have to assume the whole pot is saturated with shrimp. So can a pot, the mathematical dilemma, can a pot volume ever be 60 times the volume of its walls? Unlikely. Unless you have a huge pot. So it's really not going to work. The other time that you require, the only other way to do Heksher Kalim is to what's known as a Kedera She'ena Bas Yoma. It's no longer, has not been used in the last 24 hours. How does that work? Because the Gemara says over here, Maseches Avodah Zarah, that the only time the flavor in the pot is a positive flavor that contributes something to the food that I cook in it is if it's a Ben Yomo pot. It was only less than 24 hours old. If it's more than 24 hours old, it's presumed to no longer contribute a positive flavor, and therefore I don't have to be concerned. So let's say I would have a shrimp pot, and I want to make matzo ball soup in it. But the shrimp pot was only used more than 24 hours ago. So Gemara assumes in that, strictly speaking, the chicken soup is mutter. This is the biggest safety net in all of Hilchos Kashrus, is because a flavor that's embedded in the pot is only assumed to contribute a positive flavor and therefore prohibit that which you cook in it subsequently if it was within 24 hours. If it's more than 24 hours old, strictly me'ikar adin, you might not have to kasher the pot, because even if you cook in it subsequently, whatever comes out will only be negative flavor. So what is a negative flavor? So we'll have to explain, so what is a negative flavor? But yeah.
Let's say you have your shrimp pot, and then 24 hours later, you cook in a chicken soup. Is that, it's much harder to eat that b'dieved, or really you should really do Haggadah and then eat it afterwards? Is the ideal way to do it?
No, you can eat the food after. You would probably still have to kosher the pot to use it continuously in the future.
But then you can't do it again.
Can't do it again. Because you're not supposed to use a pot, even if it's Eino Ben Yomo, lest you come to use it when it is Ben Yomo. As the Gemara has a rule, Eino Ben Yomo, Atu Ben Yomo. So that's a Dimid Rabbanon though, right? Atu Ben Yomo. So therefore the Gemara says, Maseches Avodah Zarah, if it gives off a negative flavor, that's permitted. Geule of the Kochavim, the fact that you have to kasher Kalim, who used by non-Jew, the Azra Rachmana, Heik Mishkachas, when do I ever have to kasher them? Even if I use it, it'll be more than 24 hours old. So what? So says the Gemara, go Asra Torah, Erol Kadeira Bas Yoyim, the Lav Noisin Tam of Gamu. You're right. The only time you really have to kasher a kli midday raisa is if it is within 24 hours of being used with treif. So then let's just use the kelim, wait 24 hours and we'll have milchus and fleishiks back and forth, a whole party. Just wait 24 hours and go back and forth. Gezeira kedera she'ena bas yama mishum kedera bas yama. We have to be afraid one will lead to the other. Oh, okay. Okay. Why is it mutter if it's nice in tam levgam? Because the only time Chazal formulated the principle of tam ki ikar, the flavor is like the item itself, is if it's nois ein tam l'shvach. It gives off a positive flavor. If it gives off a negative flavor, it's negligible. So even though normally you need 60 times in order to be mevatel a flavor, that's if it's a good flavor. A negative flavor, I hope it gets negligible, you know, much less. I don't want it at all. So even if there's less than 60, it's batel berov. So we'll conclude with this. That's how Heksher Kalim works. What happens? I have a big pot. I cook shrimp. As long as I wait more than 24 hours, whatever flavor of the shrimp comes into the water is noticing tam lefgam. It gives off a negative flavor. It gets butto in the water, even if there's not 60 times in the water to the volume of the walls of the pot. Because I have to assume this pot's walls are saturated with shrimp flavor. But nonetheless, even though I don't have 60 times it, as long as I wait 24 hours, it's buttail in the water, the flavor, and then it doesn't go back into the walls of the pot. So we assume all of Hekshar came. That's why nowadays you want to do Haggadah, you have to wait 24 hours. If you want to do Libun, you don't have to wait 24 hours to do Libun because it burns the flavor where it is. But if you want to do Haggadah, you have to wait 24 hours till the flavor that will come out of the pot will be Negri, will be Batel, Mercy Time with Gam, will be Batel in the water of the May Haggadah, the boiling water that they put in the pot, and then it won't go back, enter into the pot. That's why it says in Shulchan Aruch, an important halacha, you cannot kasher Kalim on Pesach with Haggadah. Because small problem, on Pesach, Chametz is never Batel. Chametz is B'mashehu. Before Pesach, Chametz is Batel. On Pesach, Chametz is not Batel. That's why everyone knows. You want to buy milk or whatever, these things, it's preferable to buy before Pesach. Because if there's a mashu of Chametz somewhere in the liquid, it's Batel before Pesach. On Pesach, Chametz is B'mashehu. It's not Batel at all. So let's say I want to kasher, I get this all the time. I want to kasher a kli on Pesach. We forgot to kasher it before. Can we kasher it on Pesach? If you use Libun, you can kasher it on Pesach. If you want to use Haggadah, you cannot, because the whole way that it works is after you wait 24 hours, the flavor comes out into the water, it's batel, and therefore it doesn't go back in where it came from. But Chametz on Pesach is never batel. So it's going to go right back in where it came from. So it doesn't work. That's why the Ramah says, you can't kasher Kegel before Pesach. Over here, Ois Gimel, and we'll hegel, kodem zman, yisura, yochel, hagel, out of Pesach, shaz Chametz b'mashu, it goes right back into the pot where it came from. You can use Liban. That burns it right where it is. So we need to understand that principle in order to understand this. Taisus is going to ask, is the knife Ben Yomo? Is the knife Eino Ben Yomo? What am I so concerned with the knife? Over here, even if it has the flavor of Ovi Kechavim, isn't it Eino Ben Yomo? And Taisus is going to say an important principle. Okay.